Welcome to the Growing Rural Podcast, where we focus on all things rural in South Carolina. We will discuss topics on healthcare, economy, education, and the unique culture that is our rural state. This podcast is supported by the South Carolina Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare. Please join us for today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Growing Rural Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Bennett. Today, we'll be discussing primary care in rural South Carolina. Our guest today is Dr. Charles Carter. Dr. Carter is the director for the Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare and professor within the USC School of Medicine. Dr. Carter, welcome.
Hey, great to be here.
So tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you have become the director for this center.
So I'm a practicing family physician, and I've been with the University of South Carolina School of Medicine since 2005. I actually, even before that, went to the School of Medicine and graduated from there and also trained in Columbia. So I've had a long time training and practicing in South Carolina. And before I took on this position, I was a residency training director here in Columbia, so helped train family physicians to practice in South Carolina. Arriving at this as part of the center came about because of projects we were doing in the School of Medicine to help promote rural health. There were a number of them that were going on. I became involved in one of the projects from the School of Medicine relative to developing new residency training programs. Through that project and some other things that were being conducted at the School of Medicine, we eventually, through the support of the state legislature, were able to create and form the Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare, and the opportunity to be part of the leadership team came about. So that's it's kind of a story that's happened along the way, and it's been exciting to be a part of.
All right, that's great. So you were residency director for family medicine. How many of your graduating residents do you think actually went to practice in rural South Carolina or other rural areas?
So our program, I would say, you know, we had a program here in Columbia, about 10 residents a year. I would say every year about 1 to 2 would go into rural practice. And if you look historically at the program, which has been around for over 40 years, it's helped develop a really big proportion of the rural workforce, as have there are a number of other residency training programs throughout the state at various hospitals that have historically been part of the South Carolina AHEC system, and they've have been enormous contributors to the rural primary care workforce. We also had residents who would go to other states. Some were even came from other states, and many of them would also go into rural practice in those other states.
So how does it work for a resident to come to a urban residency but then end up practicing in rural? How does that process play out?
Well, I think part of it is to think a little bit about the history of, and I can speak specifically to family medicine, you know, one of the major primary care specialties. But if you look historically, training programs from the early formation of the specialty, and it was unique in that way, were both in urban teaching hospitals, right, but also in community hospitals and also in rural areas. There's a famous book by John McPhee, the Pulitzer Prize winning author, who wrote The Heirs of General Practice. And this was actually about the early days of family medicine training in Maine and the doctors that went out to practice in rural Maine from that training program. So, you know, this history really goes back to the beginnings and origins of the specialty.
Okay.
But if you look at, and there have been various times over that history where there were kind of this initial cohort of training programs, and there have been points of growth as well.
Right.
And so if you look in the long sense for this, the training programs, regardless of location, were producing physicians with the intent of being able to go anywhere.
Gotcha.
And that really has always been a value of that your graduates ought to be able to go anywhere and work. It's really only a relatively recent development that there's more of an idea that, oh, you know, there are rural programs and urban programs and suburban programs. And I think that's playing out, but I don't think that has changed the kind of core value that if you're training a family physician, that physician should be capable of working in any environment.
Right. And then these rural or suburban focus training programs are ostensibly to encourage providers to go back out to those.
Right. And so I think if you look, there are 600 and change family medicine training programs in the country. And certainly amongst those are ones that are in unique environments and in some ways are training people to work in those unique environments. But I would say the majority of them still consider themselves here to train physicians who could go into any place, rural, urban, and everywhere in between.
Okay, interesting. So if you're looking at South Carolina and the state of primary care, and specifically rural primary care in the state, how would you describe that to someone?
I would say that, I kind of start with where's the state as a whole, and I think rural primary care is both the challenges rural primary care faces is consistent with the challenges the state faces as a whole, but also much like other challenges that rural areas face, I think also amplified. So the state overall, if you look at different statistics, for example, South Carolina ranks about 35th out of the 50 states in its primary care workforce. And that's not just family medicine. That's family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics. So it's
inclusive.
So we're not in the upper half.
Right. Meaning we have an inadequate.
We have a deficit.
Right.
At the same time, another thing is our and this is a bright spot in some ways, our relative deficit to population, we're actually we're actually a little bit above average relative to our density. Mm-hmm. But all of those kind of statistics simply tell you states comparing to states.
Right.
They don't necessarily tell you what do we need.
Right.
And so that's a different story entirely. Where we rank compared to, Massachusetts or Wisconsin or anywhere else is informative, but what that tells us about where we're going, it isn't necessarily the same thing. So another way to look at it is, well, what would we be if we were looking forward to, say, 2030? Mm-hmm. Where would we need to be?
So that's not that far from now.
And that's not that far from now. In fact, if we're going to do something about 2030, now is the time we have to do it.
Right, right.
When sometimes we talk about workforce, you kind of think, okay, well, we need an X percent increase, and that sounds like producing things in a factory or something.
Right,
well,
right.
If you need, more cars, you build more cars, and there's a timeline for that, right?
Right. Yeah.
It takes X amount of time to do that. Well, the timeline for production for a physician, for example, is 7 years.
Right.
So if you're going to change the production rate for primary care, if we're thinking 2030, now is the time that we have to start doing it. And a lot of that's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we right now need just over 800 additional. So that's on top of our current rate of production.
Primary care providers.
Yeah, okay. We need an additional just over 800 by 2030.
Okay.
So that's actually a pretty big deficit relative to where we stand today. And I think that is also amplified in rural areas. So, because those kind of numbers cut across the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely counties and rural counties in the state that really have maybe one primary care access point.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
So if you think about that from how stable is that workforce? Well, if that access point goes away, now it doesn't go from I had, five and now I have four. That goes from I had one and now I have none.
Right.
And that's a much different scenario.
Exactly.
And so rural areas live closer to that margin than urban areas. I think another thing is if you look at there are a lot of factors that kind of shape why is that? Why do we need that additional production?
Mm-hmm.
Aging population, for example. That's
which means more demand
more
for
demand,
services.
More demand for services. And also aging workforce.
Right. So they're getting closer to retirement.
We have a disproportionate number of, if you look at our our primary care workforce, a disproportionate number of them are on the older side, and mm-hmm. so and are getting closer to the retirement age. So we don't really have kind of an even graph of consistent
replacement. Right, that makes sense. So you were discussing some of the factors that might make South Carolina a little bit different than, say, Maine or California as far as primary care. What are some of those factors that make the state different?
Well, I think, the idea of rural in some ways mm-hmm. makes us different. That term gets thrown around a lot, and it has a lot of different meanings. And if you look at our state, we have some advantages and we have disadvantages. One thing that's actually an advantage, if you compare us, and I think Maine's also a pretty small state, but let's right. say we're talking about Montana mm-hmm. or Idaho or somewhere out west, where the geography is vast
right.
and the population is small relative to that map.
And dense in specific areas
right. and very sparse in others.
Right.
South Carolina, geographically, is pretty easy to get across.
Right.
Travel is not as bad, but we still have pretty heavy population densities, especially along our interstates and mm-hmm. The Greenville, Columbia, Charleston kind of line.
Right.
The bulk of our population lives there. And then there are smaller communities, and so that are out from those. It's easy to get between any one of those, but getting point to point can be different. So rural, when you think about healthcare, has a lot to do with not only your community itself, but what you have in that community healthcare wise, and how long does it take you to get to things you don't have.
Right, right.
That's a really important thing. It's not necessarily miles always, but time.
So what kinds of things are vital for, I guess, primary care or first line care in a community?
Yeah, and I think that's key. Primary care, the definition of it, really is about the idea of the point of first contact. For the majority of health concerns that somebody has,
right.
there are other key parts of that definition, but that's one of the most important ones, which is this is the point where, for the majority of your concerns, that's your start.
Right.
And
they can address most
of the things that you need.
Right.
So it's not the idea that there's some kind of opposition between primary care and specialty care. In fact, mm-hmm. there should be collaboration and synergy between those two things. But the idea of this is the place you start, and most of the things you need can get taken care of there.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the key definitions. I think other things are the fact that primary care is very holistic, so it's not looking at one thing. It's trying to take a very broad approach to health.
Right.
And then also that it's really dedicated to delivering preventive services,
mm-hmm.
That's a key part of its role.
To keep them from needing specialty care.
Right, so to keep things more in a sense of either not developing conditions or keeping conditions better controlled.
Right.
So that they can not require more more intensive kinds of care or specialty care.
Right.
And it's not the same thing as saying people won't need specialty care. They absolutely will.
Right.
And even so, we talked a little bit about family medicine, but there are a lot of things that particularly I think for rural communities are important. Because parts of if you kind of think about, there's primary care, or another way to frame it is, what are the primary health needs that somebody's going to encounter mm-hmm. throughout their life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're certainly going to have periodic illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to develop chronic illnesses like high blood pressure or diabetes. Yep. Those things are going to happen.
Kind of mid to later life.
Yeah, so, those are things. We need certain prevention things to mm-hmm. occur routinely.
Babies get born. Right.
So having access to maternity care,
mm-hmm.
Either through OBGYN or through well-trained family physicians who can do maternity care, those are key things. Behavioral health care,
mm-hmm.
so having access to mental health care.
Right.
It's not unusual, actually, there's an even chance that any one of us might need an operation at some point. So having access to good general surgical care is another kind of primary community care issue.
Right.
So those are some big things. Specialty care may really depend on the community itself.
Mm-hmm. As far as what their needs are,
that can vary place to place.
Okay.
Depending on which particular conditions might be more common for that area. For example, if there's a lot of kidney disease in an area, then they might need a kidney specialist. But that doesn't necessarily always mean that every single place would. And in some ways, the density of population or how many, and how close places are to other things is part of what determines, you know, where certain practices can exist and thrive and really serve the most people.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So, you know, we talk about all these needs and matching needs to providers and services. So why isn't that happening? What are some of those barriers that prevent us from having adequate supply in these areas?
So it's certainly not one thing. I think your question was, what are the factors? And that's the right question, because it's a long list.
Right.
Over time, the challenge we see in rural primary care and in primary care in general, because, you know, when I said, oh, South Carolina needs 800 plus more people, well, that's not every state is in that situation.
Right.
So over time, there has been a relative imbalance in how many primary care physicians are being graduated from medical schools, trained over time, that the medical students haven't necessarily gravitated towards that.
So they're choosing to go into specialties or other
specialties.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, systems, particularly in urban areas, have kind of amplified the needs for those things. A lot of technology has come around. I mean, medicine
requiring specialty training.
And so this trend really started after World War II. In part, family medicine as a specialty was created to counter that trend.
Okay.
Because left alone, it was felt that that was going to.
So
really
it's essentially
happen.
A primary care specialty.
Right.
Okay.
And the idea, if you look, and so this is interesting. Another way to look for it, because another factor is how much spending occurs relative to, if you look at how much we spend in the United States on healthcare, which is right now around 19% of our gross domestic product.
Right.
So a
right.
lot. So some people think, you know, one proxy for the health of our healthcare system is, you know, how much do we invest in primary care relative to other parts?
Right.
And so right now in the U.S., the average is about 5-7% of the total spending goes into primary care.
Okay.
Compare that to, say, hospital care, that's about 38%.
Right.
All other specialties are about 20 or four times the amount that's been on primary care, roughly.
And
South Carolina is about 5%.
Right. Is there a sense of what that number really could or should be?
Well, if you look at other developed countries in the world, it's around 14% or double the best average in the U.S.
So they have higher investments in primary care.
And they have better outcomes. People live longer. They have healthier lives. And so that is why that's considered one kind of benchmark that we can think about.
Interesting.
Some of the challenges that rural areas have faced with having clinicians, primary care, other access points have to do with, you know, that's also symptomatic of other challenges that rural areas have seen. Some rural areas have certainly seen, and this is relevant in South Carolina, such as, you know, the reduction in the industry in areas. And so
just the economy and the employment opportunities.
Well, that carries over to some degree. I think there are other trends, you know, around individual things that have affected that. But the things that impact healthcare in rural areas is not just the healthcare system, but the education system, the local economy. All those things are intertwined.
Right. So what are some ways that these communities try to recruit and try to get providers into their communities, you know, given that the economy might not support a spouse hire or insurance rates might be lower or the educational system's not great for their kids. How do we combat that?
So I think there are a number of things. One, there are a lot of existing programs that both at the local level and the state level and the national level, actually, to help support people making the choice to become a clinician in a rural area. There are many, there are counties in our state that help through funding to help incentivize people. So they may offer, you know, incentives to people to come to their area.
Like what kind of incentives?
Well, they might offer enhanced pay.
Right.
That's one. Or they might offer, you know, loans to help support practice.
Okay.
So there are different kinds of incentives, bonuses, those kind of things. South Carolina AHEC system has an incentive program for both graduating residents and existing clinicians to help incentivize remaining in rural care or choosing rural care.
Okay.
Our center runs a forgivable loan program for medical students to help offset the cost of medical education. That's considered one potential disincentive, which is the cost of medical education has gone up considerably.
Right.
So it's a bigger and bigger, essentially, debt that students have. And so we do have a program that we support.
And that supports MDs and other providers.
Yeah, so MDs, nurse practitioners, and PAs. Federal government has the National Health Service Corps, which has been around a long time, and that also provides loan repayment for people choosing rural care. So there are a lot of incentive programs that are out there. And, you know, that's one potential solution. Other things have been discussed when we talked about the percent of primary care spend is actually, should there be enhanced payment for people who are practicing in rural areas?
Which might incentivize them to choose primary care instead of specialty care.
Right.
Because that's one of the drivers, correct?
Absolutely.
That specialists get a higher salary to offset that cost of education.
Right. And to some degree that the kind of services are done, you know, the primary care clinicians often are in offices providing care, that kind of face-to-face or what we sometimes call cognitive care, that, you know, we're interacting people and thinking and making decisions.
Yeah. Collegiality.
And then, you know, procedural care certainly takes a lot of brain power, but those high-tech procedures often are paid much differently,
right?
And like operations and other things like that.
Right.
So that's created that disparity.
Right. That makes sense. If you had a proverbial magic wand, what would you do in a rural community to, I guess, correct some of these imbalances? What kind of things would you try to enact?
One thing, and some of this is, if I'm going to wave that wand, I really want information before I wave it.
Right.
You know, it's like the old story of the genie. It's like, how long are you going to think about those three wishes?
Right.
Well, I'm probably going to think about them for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really want to know, because I wouldn't want to wave one wand.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think in any given rural community that the same action is going to generate the same result.
Right. They're all different.
So I'd want to know really what, and this would be something I'd want to know from that community.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think they need? What does our data and studies tell us they might need? What's the right balance between those things? And then, oh, okay, I've got a much better idea of what might fill that gap. Now I can go wave my wand.
Right.
Some things I know I might do is I'd want to make sure they have a great educational system, that they have clean water and good access to other options for healthy communities. They have wave a wand and give them a good local economy. I mean, all those things help, as we all know, help build solid communities. And so so many of those things are big contributors to what builds a solid foundation for a healthcare system too.
So let's say I'm a member of a local community. Let's say I work or I'm on the county council, for example, and our lone primary care physician is retiring in a couple of years. So what things do we need to be aware of in the current, I guess, context of providers and recruitment and practice, so that we can successfully recruit and replace that?
So I think one thing is, if it's a couple of years, then the time is now.
Right.
Is one.
Maybe too late.
Because other larger trends are happening. Actually, the national level of interest and need for primary care is not only recognized, but the demand has really gone up considerably. It's one of the most in demand specialty categories in medicine right now. So everybody is recruiting primary care.
So you have a lot of competition.
A lot of competition.
Okay.
And so that's one thing you have to consider. I think that, and also I think be aware of these larger national trends that have really altered how people think about jobs and just how the workforce moves. You know, what have we seen happen over time that really has made our workforce look different, and not just our medical workforce.
Right, overall.
Yeah, people are more mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as common that people maybe grow up in a community, stay in that community, and live their entire lives in that community.
And raise their kids.
That's right. Not as common.
Right.
And even the idea of that you go and take one job and work an entire career at a location, that's not as common.
Right.
I think the influence of things like schooling have a greater weight in how people choose where they live,
if they're
raising a family, where they live and where they're going to work. I mean, how many times do we hear, "I'm moving to so and so because it has great schools"?
Right.
We hear friends say that. We probably even all know people who've moved from one part of town to the other part of town for that reason. So that's a big influence on how people choose, and that's not. I think doctors, nurse practitioners, PAs, they're not immune to those trends. So I think one thing would be that the traditional view, for example, and it's very understandable, of having, you know, a town doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that the idea, if you're looking and that person's retiring, having a really great idea of, well, what's most essential that I'm trying to make sure I retain. And I think we're trying to retain a point of care in our community, and having that be the key emphasis, rather than we're trying to have somebody who's going to be guaranteed to live here for 40 years
and
is going to live, you know, in the community that time. And that may not be as realistic an expectation.
Kind of that pillar of the community.
Yeah, pillar of the community thing.
Right.
You know,
so
I
that's less common among primary care docs nowadays.
Well, I don't think it's less common that they're a really critical part of their community, but it may be less common that they actually live in the community they work in.
Gotcha.
And I'm not necessarily suggesting that's ideal.
Right. It's just really a reality.
It's a reality that we see in lots of parts of the economy.
Right.
And so keeping a clear eyes about what you want to retain most, which is having that access point. I think the other thing has changed nationally is the idea of actually commuting.
Right. Or the acceptability.
Of commuting. Right. And so I think people don't look as negatively on that as maybe they used to, and it's a much more assumed thing. So the idea that somebody might live 30 minutes away and work in a different place is very, very common.
Right.
And so I think that creates creates an opportunity for rural communities, because
kind of broadens the net.
Right. You know, maybe somebody's gonna live the next town over but work in your community and provide that care. So I think it's having an idea of, okay, we want to retain access to healthcare in our community. We don't want our community members to have to drive 20 and 30 minutes to get primary care.
Right.
But maybe it's okay if primary care drives 20 or 30 minutes to bring care to us.
Especially if it's their choice.
Especially if it's their choice.
So you're saying don't make that a limiting factor.
Don't make it a limiting factor, right.
Right.
Though I still think that overall there's a strong, primary care clinicians are still really interested in civic engagement and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be from walking down the street, and that's been a change. And we've seen that everywhere in the country.
Right. Interesting. So are there any other avenues or mechanisms or even provider types or models of care that would help improve this primary care delivery to rural areas?
Right. No, it's a great question, because touched on maybe a little earlier that, you know, there's a lot of other clinicians in our incentive program incentivizes nurse practitioners and physician assistants. So now, again, this is a larger trend that the primary care is not delivered just by a physician.
Right.
And primary care isn't delivered by one single person necessarily. And so the idea that, you know, that solo practitioner is not as common, and and we know another thing that can help generate good outcomes is having, you know, a team providing care
within that setting.
Okay. So in any given place you might have a team of, you know, a physician, a nurse practitioner, a PA. You may have multiple nurse practitioners there. So there's a lot of different models. And again, this is about a community having an idea of need and scale. And so it's just as important when we think about, you know, building the workforce for South Carolina that we don't kind of look at one way.
Right.
Primary care physicians aren't the only solution. Actually, nurse practitioners are critical, but aren't the only solution.
Right.
PAs are critical, but not the only solution.
It's a multifaceted.
It's really no single intervention, no single thing we do is going to solve the problem.
Right.
We need to do lots of things and build a larger team.
Right.
Community health workers are critical.
Right.
And that's going to be a growing thing we're going to see over the next decade in South Carolina is the growth of the idea of community health workers. And there's a lot of great work being done at the University of South Carolina on building that workforce.
Yeah.
So there...
And the training timeline is a lot shorter for a lot of these other alternative positions.
Absolutely.
PA program, I think, is 27 months,
right,
I believe.
Right. And so, there's a shorter timeline that leads us to...
And that's from schooling to practice, where family docs,
seven years. Right.
So you could generate a lot more that way.
Absolutely. And so... But no single thing's going to get us there. It's really about us looking kind of comprehensively at this. You know, there's been a lot of interest in telehealth.
Right.
And telehealth is a great innovation that's making positive contributions throughout our state.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's not the only solution to our problem. It's going to do a lot of good at helping people get access to specialty care more continuously. In rural areas.
Without leaving their town.
But it's not, they're still really critical that they have that home access point to care.
Right, face-to-face.
And that person who's integrating and collaborating with that telehealth clinician to make sure that what's happening at home is actually, that care coordination is happening.
Okay.
And so I think that the thing, as we look at helping the state move forward and be more in line with the health we want everybody to have, is to kind of know that every one of these interventions is important, but no single one is our solution.
Right. So we've talked a lot about kind of the challenges within rural, especially with primary care, but, you know, what is your impression of some good things that are happening in rural South Carolina?
One thing that I don't know if it's positive or negative, and I think that's rural areas are changing. Some of them because of their proximity to places, they may be becoming less rural and more parts of bigger metropolitan areas.
Right.
And, you know, whether that's a good change or a bad change, I think is something that community has to decide.
Right. It is a change.
I think that one thing that I've certainly encountered when I go around the state is the how engaged the members of rural communities are in bettering their communities. They're really committed to, and I think, you know, if I think about that as a physician who might look at going into a community, that's a really, no matter where you think about living, that's a great thing to see in a community, that people there really are invested in making where they live great.
Right, that engagement.
And that engagement really matters. Okay. So I think that's a very attractive thing, and it's really a thing I see consistently, that there's a lot of pride.
Mm-hmm.
But not just pride, but really true sweat effort and into making communities better and strengthening, you know, the local economy, the local, just the local civic engagement. And so I think that is a really nice thing to see, and I think a real positive for rural South Carolina.
So when you tell people you work with rural health, how would you define rural in a way that they would understand and get a real good sense of what rural, especially rural South Carolina, what it really is?
I think that's we deal a lot with this in the center is, what is rural? Because there are so many definitions. And a lot of, we deal a lot with health policy, so we're always working with those kind of definitions, which actually don't work that well for South Carolina.
No, not at all.
A lot of people have, joke things that they say is like, well, you're rural if you either do or don't have this thing in your town.
Right.
And I don't know if that's all that informative. And, and then some people say, well, they grew up in a city, so if they see farm animals, that's it. And that's not really relevant either.
Right.
Because the one thing we talk about with a lot of people we work with at the center is, there's federal definitions or things for what a rural area is, and those have to do with how many people live there. Mm-hmm. And then there's what your eyeballs tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually think the eyeball test is a pretty good one, because mm-hmm. it correlates with, if you feel like, okay, I'm well away from an urban center, and this is a small community, and they really look like they have to depend a great deal on what's happening immediately around them to mm-hmm. to kind of have a vibrant community. That in some ways is as reasonable a definition of rural as anything, because that from a healthcare standpoint actually goes a lot to what do they need. And
right.
So tools that we use are things like, well, not just how many people live there, but how many people live there relative to how many physicians they have and other resources. Mm-hmm. And because interestingly, South Carolina has some fairly large counties. There are areas and counties that are considered urban in South Carolina that actually, to most people, are rural.
Right, right.
And everybody who lives there thinks they're rural, too.
Right, right. They're surprised to learn they're urban.
So, and they're surprised to learn they're urban. Right. So, I think the eyeball test is a good one as any.
That sounds good. Well, this has been great. Thanks for your time, Dr. Carter. Where can our listeners learn more about your work and everything we've talked about today?
I'd really recommend people look at our website and look at our programs. We often are at rural health meetings, so we'd love to talk to folks. But check out our website.
Okay, and we'll put links to some of that information in our show notes. That's all for today. Stay tuned for more episodes coming out soon. If you have ideas for guests you'd like to hear on our program, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to the Growing Rural Podcast. If you found the content valuable, please leave a rating on iTunes or Spotify so others can find us. For more information, please visit our website at sc.edu/ruralhealthcare or follow us on Twitter at sc_CRPH. This was recorded at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Columbia. It is edited and produced by Sean Riffle. Y'all take care.